Hello, listeners. Welcome to an evening of poetry by poet and author Ann Chiappetta. Jason Cassaway is my co-host tonight.
Pleasure to be here.
I hope you enjoy listening and remember to make meaningful connections with others through writing. So I'm going to start with a little bit of biographical information, a little bit about me. I know a lot of you who are listening tonight know me personally, but in case you don't, I'm just going to go over some stuff. So growing up, creativity was part of us and our lives. My mom and dad were very much into arts and crafts and books and reading and things like that. My dad was a carpenter, and to this day, the smell of wood pulp brings me back to my childhood when I would sit and watch dad do handcrafted carpentry, and it's just a, you know, takes me back, that wood pulp smell. Mom sewed and decorated, and my sister Cheryl is an accomplished concert accordionist, and my sister Lori is a poet and writer as well. So creativity was just all around us all the time. We sang, we danced, we acted silly. I remember writing stories when I was probably in first or second grade, silly little stories, but I was writing, you know, I was doing it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, after I lost my sight, writing became the most important form of creative expression for me. And I'm glad I pursued it personally and professionally. And it just gives me a great sense of well-being, and it helps me connect to the world around me. So we're going to start with the poems. And I have two collections that I'm going to select poems from. The first collection was published in 2016, and it's called Upwelling. And the second collection was published in 2019, and that's Words of Life, Poems, and Nonfiction Essays. So I'm going to let you know which collection the poems that I'm going to read are from, so you have a better chance of following along. And if you, you know, want to listen or purchase or whatever, you'll know which collection is which. So this poem is from Words of Life, and this is the poem that I chose to introduce the collection. I write a poem that introduces each poetry collection. I find that it's a little extra little something special besides writing the good old fashioned introduction. I like to try to do it in poetry form, so it encapsulates what the collection is about. So this is what the writing muscle is. The writing muscle pumps ideas from gray matter. The writing muscle is a narcissist, caring not for other obligations, pouting when ignored. The muscle requires attention, exercise, nurturing. Sometimes it even demands control, like symbiotic partnerships. And then, like the actions demanded by a well-pumped bicep or quadricep, it will tremble with effort and delight, overtake the writer's chore list, odorous laundry piles ignored, phone calls delayed, and an occasional burnt dinner entree will fall victim to the whims of the Schwarzenegger muse. The end. The next few poems are from Upwelling, and Upwelling was my first foray into independent publishing, and I think Upwelling is more about the relationships and the people I've known throughout the years. There's only 23 poems in Upwelling, and most of them were about people and my relationship to them. So the first poem is called When We Met. Blonde and burnished, after tasting you, the past didn't seem so dismal. The future became bearable. I treated your wounds as if they were my own. Eventually, the best left us, we split. But sometimes we squeezed out the bitter space between us, you hot against my neck, healed sullen, lonely stretches with young taught rebellion. 20 years worth of yesterday's remembering lean, tan legs clad in white shorts. I sat beside you and asked, do you want to smoke? The end. Okay, so we're going to go from hot taut rebellion to dad. So this poem is about my father, Bob, and it's called Before You Go. Lifelines don't tell the origin of sun and shadow displayed in each hand. My palms have their own legends, the left repaired once, the right twice. Sutured reminders lie hidden within folds, like words which remain in the creases of the mind. Each scar brings out the braggart, the historian, a sense of relief. I fear my hands like tea leaves, tarot cards, and tyranny. Hands represent the imprint of destiny, or perhaps nothing at all. If I look into your palm, what will it reveal? Your distance and indecision? Today, I want to feel your warmth. Compare our creases so tomorrow I can recall their radiance, remembering the personal roadmap of your life. That was written in 2009. So my third poem in this little people that I know focus is dedicated to my husband, Jerry. We will be married 30 years this coming September 22nd. And interestingly enough, Abby Johnson Taylor asked me to give her a shout out before I read the poem. So there you go. This one's for you, Abby.
All right.
The Marriage Pot. Our first place was a fourth floor apartment in a pre-war walk-up. I grew to hate laundry day, grocery shopping, walking the dog. The dog abhorred our new home. Her agitation was so intense, she took up chewing when she never had before. Her change and the roaches prompted us to question our decision to stay. The vibes were ornery. So were the nightmares. I don't remember many pleasant things that happened. We worked, we partied, we hardly spoke to each other. We bought the spaghetti pot the second night we moved in. I made gravy after scrubbing the kitchen and laying down roach traps. The pot went with us on all our camping trips. And finally, to our new apartment. The dog stopped chewing the day we left the old walk-up. 15 years later, I've said goodbye to Blackie, our second apartment and its mice. Our new place is free of bugs and vermin and bad vibes. The spaghetti pot is still with us. I look at it sometimes thinking, if anything we owned could represent our marriage, it would be this pot. It's weathered the fires beneath it, protecting its contents from the heat. It isn't pretty to look at and pales when set beside a newer, unused model. But despite its dulled finish and dents, it's a trustworthy part of our kitchen. Just like our hearts when it comes to our marriage. I can depend on it to boil the macaroni just right in record time. What we put in the pot is as important as what comes out of it. Well-flavored commitments, hot simmering passion, spiced tongues, all tempered in a trustworthy apparatus, complete with scorch marks and dents of good use. Reminding us of how far we've come. This was written in September 2000. And my husband, interestingly enough, was so tickled that he took that pot and hung it on the wall for about a week. Nice. I finally took it down. And I was like, no, we can't have this ugly thing on the wall. That's terrible. It was funny. Okay. So we're going to go on to selections from Words of Life. And I think I'd like to just preface this by saying I don't really consider myself a nature poet. I consider myself more of an observer of spirit. And this poem that I wrote that I'm going to read, it's very short, but I'm trying to convey the connection of spirit with this wild creature that happened at the Bronx Zoo one day. This poem is dedicated to the great ape exhibit at the Bronx Zoo. It's called Congo. Do I know you? Skin and hair, exotic Darwinian molds. Have we met? Opposable thumbs, chest taut with sinew and leathery plates. Who are you really? Curtained eyes, jacketing. Your soul, a place men cannot follow. The end. Mm. Yeah, it was awesome looking into the eyes of a gorilla. It was
wow.
Yeah, it was weird. I had enough vision to get my nose up to the glass and actually do that.
Peer into the monkey's eyes. Yeah.
Yeah, it was amazing.
Gorilla's eyes. Yeah.
Amazing. Okay, so this next piece is called Hunter's Moon, and it's about one of my favorite creatures ever. Alpine paws track prey accented air. Amber eyes assess the old and weak. Lupin aptitude interprets signals carried upon the wind. Canine strategy overcomes as jaws quiets heaving lungs. The hunt is merciful, only the fit survive. Circular patterns shine in eyes imbued with untamed wisdom of wilderness and voices echoing from the ridgelines. Eerie timber, bittersweet, not so far from human cries heard in the distance. The end.
Wow. I like the wise, untamed wisdom, I think is the term you used.
Yes. Yeah. They're amazing creatures.
Mm.
All creatures are amazing, even if they're bugs, but I guess they're here for a reason, just like us.
Yep.
Okay, let's see what's next. Okay, so this next piece is called Keys, and it's dedicated to Billy Collins, former poet laureate. He wrote a poem that he performed. It might be on poets.org, excuse me, and it's called The Lanyard, and I love that poem. So this poem is kind of a tribute to that poem that he wrote. Keys. Jagged little metal alloy trinkets, open tumblers strung together on rings, tied to thongs or clipped to lanyards. Brass or silver toned, taste like cold blood when clamped between lips and teeth while struggling to open the door after marathon shopping sprees. One might surmise keys are replaceable. After all, what's a locksmith for? Hand slips into pocket, fingering objects, touching the stories represented in physical sentiments. A pewter policeman's hat, a plastic starfish, a silver dog bone. If someone else found these keys, would they know? would they understand the life, the symbolism, the unrevealed memories of a charm for a father or a mother gone, and the bone signifying the faith and love of a guide dog? Just trinkets inserted into slots and forever remembered with each turn, the opening of a door into a heart. The end.
Oh, I like the way that ends, but I like the funniness about the clenched between teeth and, you know, trying to get the door open after a shopping spree and the taste. Absolutely.
Yeah. No, the little mundane things, you know, they can bring you back.
Yeah.
So this is a short one. This is called The Bay Revisited, about San Francisco, one of my favorite places of all to visit. Pier 39 in December united our spirits. Californians, with their benign attitudes, smile at our eastern drawl. 72 hours limits our affirmations of bonds. Our words are succinct, our emotions precise. Mother, sisters, children, and dog, shop and touch, hug and reminisce. Our formation of hearts recedes as the bay tide drifts past Alcatraz. The sea lions bark farewell. The end. I love those sea lions. They're rascals, but they're really cool. They're really cute. So I'm going to go on to some other things. But before I do, I want to share a little bit about how I get my ideas for poetry, especially about locking in sensory memories after I've visited someplace and then gone home. And so how do I get those recollections and get those sensory, that sensory information fresh in my mind? So I wanted to share how I do that. So basically I use a voice recorder, on my iPhone. And, you know, if I feel that I want to take some voice notes of where I am and record the auditory information, and then I go back and I play it later, it takes me right back to that place, right back to those feelings, and I can pick up almost instantly where I left off. It's almost like an imprint, you know, in my brain. And I've done that quite a few times over the years. And this poem is one of the poems that I've written that I've done that for. It's called In the Absence of Things, and it's about visiting Old Sturbridge, Massachusetts. Old Sturbridge, awaiting the musket's sharp crack. There is a reckoning of auditory influence, an ebbing like the slow swirl of backwater, the final refuge preceding the frenzy of rapids. The eavesdropping of times past attends to the present, the auditory eddy of birdsongs and cell phones, the clop of hooves as the wagon trundles along, in the distance, sirens, a peacock's cry, a conversation about email, lowing of sheep, water pumps creak, crunching of feet in the sandy streets, waiting for the sound of musket fire. The end.
I love the picturesque. I just, the imagination just really flows when I hear your poetry.
Thank you. Thank you very much. That was just waiting on a bench for my husband to come back from the bathroom. That was like 3 minutes of recording. And I just like, you know, was making comments the whole time. The voice recorder was recording all those sounds in the background. And the one thing I found the most I guess, paradoxical was, you know, you hear the peacocks and the sheep and the old fashioned stuff going on, and then you hear somebody talking about email or somebody's cell phone going off, and it was just so, you know, so contrary. And it's like, we're supposed to be in old town Sturbridge and we're talking about email. So
right.
Yeah. It was interesting.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so we're going on to a poem I wrote quite a while ago, and it's called Born in Winter. I was reared in winter, tumbled in drifts as deep as my hips, made snow angels and an igloo in Pop's sleeping garden. Daddy taught me how to fillet fish, butcher deer, waste nothing, or its spirit will be sad. I brought the head to Pop. My sisters disappeared into the bathroom. Bambi's mother is dead. I'm a child of a hunter, a wife of a hunter. I understand their desire imprinted upon their souls before they were born. But I'm thankful for supermarkets. The end. Anyway, probably not for the vegetarians in the audience. Yeah, true story. Can't make it up. Okay.
Nope.
So this next one I included because I know a lot of people out there are probably thinking, when is she going to get to the poems about the guide dog? So this one is for you all, and it's called Verona, and hopefully I don't get all verklempt at the end. For those of you that don't know, I guess I'll say this now so I don't get all weepy later. Verona passed away in May this year. She was 14. So, Verona. I wait for the knock. Once it comes, my life will change forever. Since I arrived for 2 days and nights, for my entire life until now, I've waited, unprepared, searching. I sit on the bed, wondering how it will feel an hour from now, and go numb with nerves. Questions scroll across the marquee of my mind. What will she be like? Will she like me? Learn to love me? The hot red letters of doubt scroll past. Can she guide me? Will I be able to trust her? Then the knock comes and my heart jumps. Come in, I say, hoping I can open my heart with as much ease as the open door. I hear her nails click on the floor. I put out a hand to touch her head. She licks me, tail wagging. Anne, this is Verona, the trainer says. I don't really know what to say or how to feel, but her presence soothes me. Aren't you a beautiful girl, I say. We sit on the floor together. The marquee of doubts vanishes. The blocky red letters fade, replaced by a message of calm, canine acceptance, dressed in ebony. She settles her head in my lap. Each stroke of my hand strengthens the hope, quiets the fear. The questions dissipate with the knowledge, stroke by stroke, that she is the one who will lead me. January 2009. Water break. Tissue break.
Okay. Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah.
She was a beautiful dog, so it's only apropos that we write something that beautiful for her and all the dogs in our lives, you know?
Yes.
Okay, so we're going to change it up a little bit. So this poem was written after we spent the weekend on Long Beach Island, with my all the girls in my family, so my sisters, my nieces, my mom, and me, and for her, my sister Lori's 50th birthday. It was very interesting. And this is more like a prose poem. It probably, when you're listening to it, it probably sound more like an essay, but it is considered poetry, but it's more prose, more casual, more conversational. It's called Shorebird. My sister taps my hand. There was a gull trying to get the lunch out of a bag someone left on a blanket. Really? I pause the audiobook and take out a headphone. Yeah, it's on the blanket, looking around. Now it's taking another step. This is funny. I could picture it in my head. I wait, then, ooh, it's looking at the bag. Now it's pulling out the lunch. Now it's dragging it away. By this time, our gang is watching and laughing at its antics. Shouldn't we stop it, says one niece. Why, it serves them right for leaving the bag open, says the other niece. We all laugh. Another sister lobs a grape in the opposite direction, and the gull hops after it. By this time, the blanket's owner has come back, and I hear a sister explain what happened. The owner thanks us and then zips the lunch into another bag before leaving. Here we go again, says one niece. I wonder if it knows how to unzip things, says the other niece. Okay, says my sister. It's eyeing the bag. Now it's back on the blanket. It's looking around. Now it's trying to open it. The gull gives up, unable to unzip the bag, and walks away. Then it lets out that laughing call we all know so well, and I hear its wings beat the air off to search for other abandoned lunch sacks. That was written in 2008. And there is an essay I wrote that accompanies this in Words of Life, about Long Beach Island and the people we met and the things we did. And it's a satirical essay. It's, but it's dedicated to my family and all our family vacations.
That's nice.
Yeah.
I could picture it all.
Yeah. I mean, that's while we were sitting there and all this was happening with that bird, I'm like, what if it really can unzip a lunch bag? That would not be good.
That would not be. It would be funny, though.
Oh, yeah. Anyway, so before I get to the last piece that that I want to share with everybody, that's a rather long essay, I want to share some new poetry. And these poems were written during National Poetry Month, which is in April each year. And thanks to one of the writers groups I belong to, Behind Our Eyes, we had a month-long poetry challenge going on, and these poems were part of that challenge and were the poems that I wrote for that during that time. So here we go. First poem is called Aurora Borealis. It comes in the night, polar glitter, hushes fields, settles like a silent paramour. Subdued breath whispers in the highest elevations. Hues burst skyward, like images woven among dreams. Surreal glow dances, pulses like an alien song. Northern lights, how lovely is the universe. The end. This is another prose poem that I'm going to read called The Joining. It's a personification poem slash essay. And I'm sure you all be able to figure out what I'm talking about after the first sentence or two, but I'm going to read it anyway. It's okay. So I said it was called The Joining. I am the bridge between two bodies crafted with leather and steel, new and stiff. I resist at first, then stretching, molding to the body and belly. I become soft and supple during the initial months, being exposed to rain, snow, and heat. Sometimes a salty tear finds its way to me. I absorb it, not understanding. I become one with the wearer, feeling the challenge of new tasks and the thrill of a job well done. I am warmed by this being's body. At day's end, I radiate the warmth, my straps soft and flexible to the touch. The time comes when I feel a new hand. The grip on my handle is awkward. Somehow it feels different. I feel the tension, the hesitant hold upon me, and I try to convey the wearer's confidence to the hand, hoping for the best. The new grip is tight at first, then relaxes over time. The hand on me becomes exclusive, not like when I was new and many hands used me. I become the transfer point, a silent yet powerful tool linking two beings. We flow into one another, speaking without sound. I am the conduit, finally reaching the pinnacle I was meant to attain by connecting these two creatures, one two-legged and one with 4 feet. The end. Jason, did you guess what it is?
Well, let's see. Could it possibly be a dog harness?
Yeah, you got it. Thanks. Okay, everybody. We are getting to the end of my sharing here tonight. But before I get to this last one, I really want to thank everybody for coming. And the recording will be available as soon as I can get it ready. And I want to thank Jason for helping out. It helped tremendously with my performance jitters. So thank you.
Good. Absolutely.
And if anybody wants to read anything more about me, you can go to annchapetta.com or thought-wheel.com, or you can look me up on Facebook under Annie Chapetta. So the last thing I'm going to share tonight is an essay called The Leading Edge, and it was in Words of Life. And I just want to say that the way I read my poetry and my writing, I listen to it and then I recite it, and it takes a lot of practice and a lot of time to really get the flow going. And I hope I do this one right, is all I can say. I've practiced it quite a bit. And the other thing about this piece, it's called a lyrical essay. From people that don't know, is it takes two opposite ideas and blends them together paragraph by paragraph. So one paragraph about the first idea, and then it goes into the second paragraph, so it'll switch back and forth between these ideas and then blend them together at the end. Okay?
Okay.
Okay. The final stage of vision loss and blindness is here. Like the leading edge of an eclipse, I'm scared, and not for the reason many folks would assume. I accepted the loss of not being able to see faces, colors, and objects years ago. I'm afraid of the isolation this disability brings upon me. And I sense the skulking shadow of fear and depression it holds in its jaws. 2, I was excited when I discovered a new app that could help blind folks experience the 2017 lunar eclipse with haptic feedback on mobile devices. My finger followed the vibrating pixels during the event, and with it came the memories. I'm fascinated by space noise. For many years, the shortwave radio helped. I listened to the staccato blasts of interference and imagined alien messages hidden among the clicks and crackles. It was hypnotic, feeling my entire being. I heard infinite possibilities listening to the space dust from an auditory telescope. Somewhere on the other side of the world, there could be someone like me who was listening, doing, or feeling as I did. 3. My world broke apart at age 5. Again at age 9, and again at age 14. The first time, it was my mother's nervous breakdown, causing abandonment scars. The second time, it was the confusion and insecurities caused by my parents' divorce. And the third time, just when post-divorce stability had returned, my father remarried. The precious balance in my life at the time was ripped from me again, and that was when the black dog began creeping unbidden into my life. Trauma caused withdrawal, to seek a place both within and without that was quiet and under my control, safe. The black hole became the skulking beast, nipping at my heels whenever I felt insecure or was brought back to those traumatic times. 4. I love the stars. Before my vision worsened, I would show my children the constellations, talk about astronauts and the universe beyond us. The wonder in the faces of my son and daughter as we lay face up on the rough wooden picnic table brought tears to my eyes. I was waiting for the day the foggy velvet curtain would prevent me from sharing the heavens with anyone ever again. 5. I'm already isolated. I choose self-limited routines, working long hours, and rejecting social events because the entire process is exhausting. I often feel conflicted when considering attending a party or a meal in a restaurant. The questions begin and take up all my attention. Will it be easy to find? Will the taxi driver deny me a ride because of my guide dog? How willing am I to tolerate the likelihood of being ignored in a room full of people? Will the music be so loud that I cannot hear the conversation? More times than not, I decline. Remaining home avoids the unknowns, the discomfort, and the frustration of being blind in public. 6. The first time I explored a tactile astronomy map of the Northern Hemisphere, I cried. How I missed the patterns, the Big Dipper, the Little Dipper, the North Star, the freedom. How satisfying it was to let my fingers find the answers and not be disappointed by my failing eyes. If I could only go back, return to that wonderful time, and take those feelings of satisfaction and passion, treat the barriers like fingers on a map, find the answers in the heavenly patterns. 7. It scares me to recognize that I am and will probably always be predisposed to depression, to feeling I've lost control of the ability to cope with blindness. The darkness isn't just a slick, snarling dog, but a scaly, wicked beast I do not feel equipped to battle. Who am I? How do I combat the beast? Will my armor suffice? 8. I've been toying with the idea of buying a new shortwave radio. Tuning into broadcasts from other countries lets me escape to a good place in my mind. There is a healing element to the radio endeavor. If I leap far enough into the sky, the fear and depression are exchanged for exhilaration. the end.
Wow. Great how you're able to tie that all together.
Yeah, I hope it worked for everybody. Thanks so much for listening and supporting independent authors like me. I'd love to hear from you. Feel free to send me an email at anniecms64@gmail.com. And I'd love for you to subscribe to my blog at www.thought-wheel.com, or feel free to use my website to purchase my books. That's www.annchappetta.com, and Ann Chappetta is all one word and spelled A-N-N-C-H-I-A-P-P-E-T-T-A. And remember, stay well and stay creative.